Hey everybody, welcome to Sound Bombing. I created this show for people who want to experience a radical, life-changing journey through the sounds of my diverse guests. I hope that each sound you hear on this show will strengthen your faith, encourage your dreams, and challenge you to awaken the greatness within you.
Drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We're gonna drop the bomb.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
We have an incredible show for you today. The gentleman we're speaking with today has had to ride the massive highs and lows that come with entrepreneurship. During this process, he has had to personally navigate the pitfalls of being a celebrity entrepreneur and has used this experience to help him become a better business person and a better human being. From growing up in a single-parent family in Washington, D.C., to writing speeches for President Obama and then creating two of the most important radio innovations of the last decade, there is no question Allende Alokoye has come a long way in a short period of time. Allende, whose name means we gave praises, and he came in Yoruba, has founded multiple tech companies and considers himself a serial entrepreneur and the co-founder of his third live broadcast radio streaming venture, Needle, the AI-powered search engine for the live audio broadcast. He is a TechCrunch contributor and executive board member of the Applications Development Alliance and was a recipient of the 50th anniversary March on Washington Emancipation of Capitol Award with Mark Cuban and Congressman John Lewis, a former cast member on the show Millionaire Makeover and sought after speaker. But before all the awards, fame, and accolades, at the age of 7, Allende's father was murdered, but music, family, and friends are what inspired him to continue in spite of all the odds. He graduated from Juniata College and eventually ended up at Clear Channel and CBS. But his desire to make a difference in radio was a strong calling. His love of music and technology skill led to his inventing a way for radio stations to stream on mobile platforms. Allende says and attributes his success to his mother, whom he said showed him entrepreneurship at a very young age. He explains that she had her own Amway business. He says, I got the bug at a very young age because she taught me about freedom. She taught me about living the life of your dreams. Allende, welcome to Sound Bombing.
Wow, wow. What a great introduction. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. And nice to be here.
Man, I'm so excited that you're joining me here. I know you have a busy schedule. I know you have a young baby. I want to say her name is Dara, I believe. 15-month-old
right.
Baby.
You really done the
oh, man, this is the real deal, homeboy. We go hard cold, man. We go hard in the paint, as they say, man. So I know you have Nigerian roots. You got to with a name like Allende. Let's talk about being Nigerian, man, and Nigerian roots and Nigerian business, man.
Well, I wish it was as cut and dry as that, but as many of your listeners can attest to, being African American is never that uncomplicated. So, you know, born in Washington, D.C. to two parents who were part of the civil rights movement, progressive, and wanted to reclaim their history and started with their names. And they practiced Yoruba. They actually were practicing independently before they met each other. My mom from Philly, my dad from Harlem. And when they got together, they, you know, when they got married, they had already changed their names. And when my sister and I were born, we were both named in a traditional naming ceremony, just like they were. So that's how I got my name. We did some research on our roots. And yes, I have Nigerian in my blood, but it's actually only, you know, a small percentage. So it's like less than 10%. So it's the rest of it's from West Africa. So,
well, you have a strong name. As I said to you, before we got on, my children, strong names, Ayodele, Mosiah Sekou, and Samira. So we were very, very intentional with giving our children strong names. And interesting, Ayinde, at a time where I'm sure you've seen the documentary Freakonomics that talked about black names. Let's use that as an example. Names that are very, very ethnic, man. Since you've taken on this strong Nigerian name, has there been any challenges prior to you becoming this celebrity in the business and entrepreneur? Have there been any challenges with your name? Again, we have a president, Barack Hussein Obama, who was proud of his name, who a lot of children were named after him right after that. What about you? Any challenges with your name?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, growing up, everything about you shapes your personality. And for me, it was, you know, being in pretty much either an all, like a mostly black school where people would make fun of me and say Kunta Kinte and so forth, just not really understanding their own African history, right? And then going to an all white school where it was just like very just weird, right? So I always had that different name, and pretty much the best part of celebrity for me, and by the way, my celebrity was a long time ago, so I no longer consider myself a celebrity, but the best part about it for me was not having to spell my name for about 2 or 3 years. So, because I literally spell it probably once a day. So, you know, it's a wonderful experience, but obviously it comes with some ups and downs. And the thing is, like, you know, that discrimination that you're talking about with Freakonomics, like, you don't know that it happens. On very rare occasions do you actually know or hear that it actually happened to you. You just don't get that call. You just don't get those follow-up emails. And a lot of times my emails go to spam because of the Nigerian name, I think. So, you know, at some point, in about 5 or 10 years, we'll all win like some class action lawsuit when it comes out that Google's been like putting Nigerian names in spam. But a lot of times people tell me that my name, like my emails go directly to spam. I'll tell you this one quick story, which is that, related to this, which is that my first job out of college, I showed up for the first day of work or job interview, for the job interview. And the woman who was from Louisiana said, I thought you were Chinese. So when I showed up, I can only put together that the way that I speak on the phone and her understanding of what an African American is supposed to sound like didn't match up. So the only thing that she could think of, because she'd never heard of my name before, was maybe I was Chinese. So.
Wow. So it's interesting you talked about that a lot of the Nigerians' names or your emails are actually going into spam. You know, you asked me about the work that I do prior to coming on the show, and a lot of my work is centered around educational equity, making sure that all kids get what they need. And Harvard put out this body of research around this implicit bias test. And what they discovered is what you sort of talked about, is they discovered that folks who had quote unquote ethnic name, whatever that actually means, ethnic names can be names with people of African Americans who are very creative. Ethnic names could be an Asian name. Ethnic names can be the name that you have. And they discovered a lot of those individuals didn't get callbacks from, let's just say, interviews. They didn't get callbacks from resumes that they actually submitted. And so to hear you say that, you know, despite of your name being very different, you've been able to overcome those challenges. And I definitely, you know, appreciate you sharing that, because again, in the business, in the world that you're in, as you talked about not being a celebrity anymore, we're going to bring that up in a second, is that you're still showing people that this little brown boy who grew up in Washington, D.C. with all these degrees, with all of these accolades, that my name sometimes when it comes up on a document, I still get sort of those set aside to the level.
I read that. Thank you. Yeah, I read that study as well. And I remember my experience in radio sales. So I worked for, you know, I guess I'm over 20 years now in broadcast radio or radio related, you know, career. And I started my career in broadcast radio sales. I was very fortunate, very, 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 very fortunate to work for the companies that I worked for and the radio stations that I worked for. I mean, when I look back at it, it's kind of crazy. The top radio stations, KFI in LA, Howard Stern, at one point, and then before that, and some people are saying you sold advertising for these personalities. Yes, I totally.
I know totally how. First of all, Howard Stern was the one with my eyebrow. I went, Howard Stern.
yeah, sold my soul. But while I was working for Stern, I remember I would. So some of your audience knows, at least back then, you know, you could make $250,000 selling broadcast radio easily a year. And so it's still, you know, sales. So I'm making cold calls, right? And I'm saying, hi, my name is Allende from, you know, KLSX and blah, blah, blah. And so many of these people are saying, what'd you say? What'd you say your name is? Dave? So listen, I'm like, I'm already selling my soul. And I was like really at the point where I was like, maybe my name is Dave so I can make this sale. But I couldn't ever like do that because it just felt so just like against every aspect of my being to pretend that I was somebody that I wasn't, you know? So you just go with it and figure it out. Because everybody has a cross, you know? It's not like, you know, if it's not your name, it's something else, right?
Yeah, but the reality is we don't want to use those as excuses not to be successful. And that tends to happen a lot. Exactly. In many of the communities that you and I are a part of, the minority community. So I'm excited to hear that you never use that as a crutch. And I'm sure that comes from your mom. I love the story of you talking about your mom. And sorry to hear about the tragic death of your dad. We're going to come back to that because I'm going to ask you some questions about that. But
okay.
You know, talk about what your mom instilled in you that really got you excited about radio and technology and business.
Well, my mom is just this really super dynamic, full of love woman from Philly and New York. She still has her New York accent, right? And
I bet she puts it on super when they go to New York, right? It's something about New Yorkers. When they get back to New York, man, they on that hardcore, like everybody's from Brooklyn, right? Like there are no other boroughs in New York besides Brooklyn. But folks who've been out for 80 years still have that hardcore New York accent.
It's true. When you get around people like, you know, yourself, it just comes out even more. And she was just like super, super hardworking person. And we moved around a lot when I was a kid. So, and I still remember. So there's a couple dynamics. The number one, so she was super hardworking, but she was a single mom, right? So you know, she wanted us to have better educations than she was afforded. So she, just like any parent, right? And so we just moved further and further out towards the suburbs. And I always remember like, just radio was just a huge part of our lives, both like in the car, just singing together, just having it on, whether it was talk radio, whether it was my mom trying to like shove jazz down our throats, right? Like at a young age, we just did not have an appreciation for it, but I'm glad that she did, right? Now I love Charlie Parker because she worked so hard to make sure that we listened to it. And then, we because we were moving around a lot, we were still in the same metropolitan Washington D.C. area, and I think you've heard the story where I talk about like still listening to the same radio stations that my friends at the previous school were listening to and feeling like I was connected to them. And that's like, I just had this fascination with radio at a very young age because, I knew that I was connected to my friends. I knew that other people were listening, even if I couldn't see them. And, I spent a lot of time alone as a kid just listening to the radio because either my mom was working or like, my sister, God rest her soul, she had cancer at a very young age. So while she was at the hospital, I was just home listening to records or listening to the radio. So it became like a super, it became like one of my best friends.
And I noticed that during some of the interviews that I checked out, you and I were listening to the same radio station. You were listening to the Green Eyed Bandit, a.k.a. Woo! Donnie Simpson on WKYS. Shout out to Donnie Simpson. Video Soul, you know, WKYS. Donnie Simpson was the man. So you talk about your mom and the impact that she had on you. What impact did the death of your father have on you as a young boy growing up in a very, very big city? And then also, what role did that play as it relates to you as an entrepreneur?
Interesting. I'm not sure if I've ever related it to the role that my father's passing had in me becoming an entrepreneur. But I can say, and I can explore that with you, but I can say that as a young man, it just was like this weird jolt. Like you knew something was missing, but I was so young. I was only 7, about to turn 8. That you don't really understand. You just like, you just don't know. And then you just know that this person's missing. And then, so it really sort of, you know, I think as a young person, boy or girl, losing a parent at that age just pulls a rug from under you. And so, you know, I found myself, you know, just daydreaming a lot, right? So just the sort of loss in thought. And so, you know, you compound all those different sort of factors, being home alone and just being in my imagination. I just had a world in my imagination, which is probably why I started creating the things that I've created. So, you know, it's like I had so much practice being in my imagination. It probably led to all of my career.
So you talk about tragedy, you talk about loss, you talk about, you know, creativity during the time of loss. Then what then is your vision for bringing people together through technology? Because you share how even though you moved around, that your peers were still listening to the same thing that you were listening to. So that kept you connected.
Yeah. And you said that, you know, what was it like being, you know, not having a dad in a, you know, in a big town. The thing about D.C., and because you're from D.C.?
From Chicago.
You're from Chicago.
But I live in Baltimore, which is right next door.
Okay, you live in Baltimore. See, when I was growing up, my experience of D.C. was that it was a small town with a big city mentality.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Oh, really? Well, you've heard it from me, okay? Let me just say. So, and the reason is because D.C. square footage-wise and square mile-wise is a small imprint. But we as Washingtonians knew that the world came to us. Like, you know, for better or worse, that was the place that controlled most of the world, right? And you had every single every country in the world, every international coming to this place, diplomats. And so I, being like a person who liked to meet people, I always met different people. I grew up in a very multicultural school, even though it was mostly black, when I was in like junior high school, when I was in high school was like mostly black, but all the way through elementary school, it was like every single nationality that there was. And then, of course, you know, just being in the city. So I felt like I had traveled the world by the time I was 18 years old. Like, I felt like I had been everywhere because I always had these conversations that were wide ranging with all types of different people, and they were telling me about their homeland. And then at some point in my 20s, I realized, sorry about that, at some point in my 20s, I realized, oh, I actually haven't traveled at all. I've never been anywhere. And so, having the feeling that I had, and then also having some really racist, very sad moments with friends when we'd moved out to the boonies, really gave me the understanding at a young age that exposure to culture was one of the things that brings people together, right? What I believe is that the cure to racism is dialogue, right? There's no way that a person who is a racist person or has racist beliefs can have a conversation, a real dialogue with another human being for an extended period of time and at a deep level and hold on to those beliefs, right? Like, they will erode at some point and they'll continue to erode. And so, so I've always felt like if we can get more people listening to more things and finding out that, on Needle, that's my company, Needle as in a haystack, right? It's, we're a search engine for live audio, right? So we have an app that converts audio into text so that radio listeners can search live broadcasts as easily as they search the web by keyword, and then create their own live broadcast that's searchable by the words that they say, right? That's my little plug, right? But I want you to understand what we're doing. So a person who wants to listen to Beyonce, they can search for Beyonce on Needle. They can find that Beyonce song playing in Wyoming or playing in Wichita or playing in Burma, okay, or in Thailand. They can find these artists playing all over the world and then discover what comes next. And the idea being that if you find out that somebody in Thailand is listening to the same thing that you're listening to, then the world all of a sudden becomes a little bit smaller. And that's the idea. It's like we are all experiencing the same ups and downs, and if we can just kind of get past the visuals of things, then we can actually understand that and be closer. And I believe that racism can be eliminated in our lifetime.
And I guess by using technology, I mean, that's a great way to be able to do it, because the internet, you can talk to people from across the waters, across the globe, across bodies of land as well. And so you using technology as a way to bridge those gaps is a great idea. Where did the idea of the Needle concept come from?
The idea came from it's funny because people always ask me questions similar to that, and I always feel like I need to give them like some really structured, very wise way of generating ideas. But the truth of the matter is, all of my best ideas, all of them, came from prayer.
I like that. Mm-hmm.
They came from God. They came from my relationship with God, whatever you want to call it. Every single one of them came from that higher space, and all of the bad ideas did not, right?
Let's blame it on something else, right?
Yeah. So literally, third venture in is Needle. And, I'm saying, okay, so what were the really good parts of all the body of work that I've done before you know, what were the parts that people really responded the most to? And I took, you know, and I said, okay, let me take this idea of search and let me put it together with the idea of, you know, really bringing people together, but also giving people a voice. Because in our previous startup, people kept saying, you know, I really, really would like to start my own radio station. And I just kind of did what any really thoughtful entrepreneur would do. I just blew them off. And I really didn't listen to them. So I was like, look, we already have radio stations. These are pros. Don't let these guys do it for you. But then, and this one, I was like, you know what? Maybe we should stop blowing these people off and actually like listen and give them a voice. So we combine search, we combine user generated content creation, and we came up with Needle. What we wanted to do was, this was 2016 when we came up with Needle. 2017. It was right after the election. And the premise is that I truly believe what the intelligence community has told us happened in the election actually happened. I figured, you know, the CIA and the FBI had like no real reason to lie to us about what happened in the last election. And so if what happens happened, where you had all of these voices suppressed who were Democratic voices being suppressed on Twitter and social media by Russian bots, and you have basically the wool pulled over many voters' eyes, then I see that as a challenge of media being conglomerated and too concentrated in the hands of just too few people, and voices being oppressed. So what would be the opposite of that, right? And so the opposite of that would be 120,000 radio stations from all over the world that are searchable, so you can find information, and a microphone that you could tap and start talking. And then if you started talking, how could people discover you? Oh, well, if your words were searchable, and if somebody's talking about election, I can search for election, and I can find all the people who just said election at this moment and discover what the truth is. And that's, you know, that's where it came from.
Mm. So you mentioned this concept of like the right idea or an idea coming from your faith. And I like how there's an intersection between your gifts, your passion, and your faith. How does one know when they have the quote unquote right idea?
Yeah. I heard a lot of different people talk about it, and I've heard it said recently that it's that thing that, if you know, I heard you say ass on your on one of your shows, so I'm gonna take a liberty and say shit. When the shit hits the fan, when the shit hits the fan, like something that you would do no matter what, right? Like that's the right for me. The right idea is that thing that drives you no matter what. That thing that just gets you so stands the hairs up on your arm and on your back, and you're just like, yeah, this is something that ride or die. This is something that I will do. A friend of mine once said to me, you know, Allende, this is something I know about you that maybe a lot of people don't know. If you won the lottery tomorrow for $100 million, you put $100 million in your business. and that, like, that's another way to know, right? Like, if there's no other constraint, would you be doing what you're doing? Because startups are so hard. Businesses are so hard, whether it's a startup or just a traditional business. They're so hard. You need something that's going to drive you. And for me, it's got to be something that I feel that God has given me. Otherwise, there's no purpose. I need to at least try to live my life in a way that's doing it for a higher purpose.
So we have read about all your successes and all the great things that you've done. We know that you were on a TV show, The Matchmaker. We know that you've written speeches for Barack Obama, then Senator Barack Obama, now eventually President Barack Obama. And so we celebrate all those successes, but I want you to share with me failure. What does failure mean to you? And then what have you learned from failure in your whole life as it relates to your business?
There's a quote from one of my favorite movies, and I'm going to get it wrong, but it's a movie with Matt Damon, who I used to be a major fan of before he started talking.
Before he started talking about politics and all these other things?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Exactly. It's a movie called Rounders, which I highly recommend. If you're a poker fan or if you just believe in comeback stories, this is an amazing movie. And he talks about these poker players, they only remember their bad beats. And it comes to mind, meaning the times that they've lost. And it comes to mind when you ask me that question, because literally you said, we know about your successes, but what about your failures? Literally this entire time, the only thing I thought that I was describing was my you know, the times that were down. Because I think we are our worst critics, and although we have already achieved what we wanted to achieve with Needle, like our goal with Needle was to when we set out in 2017 was to democratize access to information and the microphone itself. And today, we have already done that. Like, you, for the first time in the, as far as we know, in the history of the planet, can start your own live radio broadcast that is discoverable by the words that you say. And, like, literally, no one can suppress your ideas. Like, so we've already succeeded at that. But there's another way that I look at it every single day. It's like, is it ubiquitous? No. Okay, keep working. So it's like it doesn't matter to me right now if, like, 10,000, 100,000, 1 million people, 10 million people are using it, because it's not ubiquitous. So, I try not to think in terms of failure. I'm sure you've had, you know, your other guests on your show have said very similar things. It's probably not a coincidence. You know, people who are high achievers tend to think of things as learning, tend not to dwell on things that didn't go well. This will be a very unpopular thing that I'm about to say, but there's a certain person in the sphere, I'll just say, the current president of the United States is someone that we can all learn from.
I would agree. Because, I would definitely agree with that. And it's interesting that you would say that was unpopular. I think, I don't know if it's unpopular, I think people may not feel comfortable actually saying it.
Well, okay, let's make the distinction. Policies, actions, I mean, where do you start, where do you end? There is so much that is abhorrent about what we're witnessing at this time in our country. That said, let's separate everything and just focus in on one aspect. And that one aspect is how he speaks. And the way that he speaks about his life, who he is,
creates belief in himself primarily, and that's the only thing that matters, right? You have to have that belief in yourself. If you do not, you will not be successful. And it creates that belief that other people have in him. And although there are a lot of challenges, without getting political, there's just a lot of things that I would change if I could about the entire situation. He is a case study on how to treat failure. He just absolutely doesn't accept it any place in his vernacular, any place in his thought process, and it works. And that's really like a case study for everyone to think about in terms of creating things in the world, bringing things out, and like really having that myopic point of view towards success. And that's what it takes.
Well, speaking of the concept of failure, and we know that you've been very successful as an entrepreneur, why do you think that you've lasted so long as an entrepreneur? Is it because of, is one of the reasons, the reason, is one of the reasons that you look at failure in a different way, or are there some other strategies that you actually use as it relates to staying on task as an entrepreneur?
No, I think it's a little bit of a Terminator type situation where, you know, I have that picture in my mind of the Terminator. He's like walking through fire, you know, he gets hit and just keeps coming. And that's kind of how I, like, no matter how challenging things appear, I always ask myself that question that my grandmother asked me one night when I came to her at the kitchen table where she would sit and drink her coffee before she would go to bed. And I came to her at the kitchen table with all kinds of challenges during my second startup. And I said to her, you know, Grandma, I think it's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. You know, we got this. And she looked at me. She goes, baby. She looked at me. She goes, do you believe? And I said, yeah, I believe. That's all you need. And literally that next week, maybe week and a half, we raised, you know, more money than we had ever raised before. And I always go back to that because I always think about, no matter what the challenge is, I always think, okay, I get it. Like, seriously, do you think it's going to happen? I'm like, yeah, of course it's going to happen. I have these conversations with myself. Of course it's going to happen. Of course. And based on that, you can't stop. You can't, if you really have that belief, you don't get sidetracked by apparent failures.
And speaking of that, I know that you're talking about being a failure. There's always somebody watching us, and you have a 15-month-old child that's watching you on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, yeah.
What tips could you give someone who's new at parenting and or balancing work or an entrepreneurial lifestyle? Because this adds a whole nother level of giving you something else to do as it relates to making sure that you're taking care of the family, this 15-month-old child, and also running a business.
Yeah, but it, you know, back to what we were just saying, like, there's just no way. Am I going to listen? He's like, come on. I wouldn't let me down. I won't let God down. And I'm definitely not going to let this little girl down.
you got a lot of folks rooting for you, man. I just pictured your grandmother in the kitchen, man, and sitting there drinking the coffee, just probably rocking back and forth. That typical grandmama. I don't care what culture you come from. That typical grandma spirit. And you've gone to college. You've read every business entrepreneur magazine. You watched TED Talks. You've listened to Shark Tank. You know Mark Cuban. You've been around Obama. And you walk into the kitchen. His grandmother's sitting there, and you ask this one question that people at the Wharton Business School have been asking for a very, very long time. And your grandmother looks at you and gives you that. And I'm sure Party was like, "Is that it?" Yeah. It's like that Yoda moment, that Yoda moment. Like you were looking for something so, so deep. And then she makes that one. That's the beauty of it. But how is it being a dad and balancing this entrepreneur lifestyle?
It's phenomenal. And you know, I'm glad because I had for a long, like people misunderstand, like, I just wanted everything to be so perfect. And I wanted, like, you know, because I didn't have the ideal childhood that I would have wanted, right? If somebody said, okay, what would you want? That, like, in retrospect, I'm glad that I had the childhood that I had, right? But it doesn't fit that ideal. I wanted to create this ideal for, you know, my offspring, for my children. And I, along those lines, I would have waited another 5-10 years, but that doesn't really make sense. And I'm so glad that I didn't, because, you know, number one, if anybody's out there who's listening, who's about to have a child, anybody who does have a child can tell what I'm about to say is true, that, you know, children bring great luck, you know? And I'll say that we were just on this great tear with Needle. And then literally we raised, you know, our seed round right when she was born. And part of it was that I made a promise to her that she would be, you know, born into, you know, wealth and happiness. And there it was. So I think the thing that happens is that, you know, things just yield and a way is made, and you can plan all you want, but there's literally no planning for having a child. You know this, Lamar, because you've got kids. There's no planning for having a child. There's no book that you can read. Like, it took me about 9 months to figure this out. 9 months. Was it before? It took me 9 months to figure it out, that there's no book that you can read to prepare you, because every circumstance is different. Every child is different. And it just is, you know, just like, you know, we already talked about God, so I'll just bring him back in, because God just makes a way. Just makes a way. There's no explaining it. So the one thing I will say is that they don't tell you about having a kid is everybody says that you're going to love this child more than you've loved anything. And that's true. What they don't tell you is that every single day you love them more.
Yeah, I love that, man. I love that. So I got to share something with you. So I'm driving down the highway in St. Louis, and I look over to the left and I see the iHeartRadio logo. And I must admit, I got so excited, because when I read the bio and information that was sent to me from my new producer, Noemi, it mentioned that you are part of the original team that developed this iHeartRadio app. And I was like, man, how amazing is this? I'm driving down a highway, you know, one researcher called it your reticulator activating system. You know, before I've never noticed that sign, but now noticing that sign, I'm connecting that with you. How were you chosen to be a part of this team to then create this app, this iHeartRadio app? And then what did that app do for your career as a tech entrepreneur?
Yeah, I chose myself, man. I started, thank you for asking the question. I started a company when I had no idea what a startup was, because I don't really think that the people were calling it the same things they call it today. But I had no idea what a startup was. It was 2003. I had left my radio advertising sales career behind voluntarily, and I wanted to start my own thing, and I started a company called Thumb Radio, right? Because the idea was, I remember I was walking down the street, I was like, what can we call this company? Thumb Radio. How do you use a product? Oh, use your thumbs
to find radio. And the idea was to bring every radio station on the planet to your cell phone. Now, think about this. This was back in 2003. This was before there was an app store, before there was an iPhone. And, you know, like, phones were just getting smaller and smaller. Like, the Zoolander joke was, like it's, that the phone was, you know, as big as, like, a Barbie phone, right? And so we were saying, we were literally talking about putting things in the cloud. When Steve Jobs was about to release the iPod, right, putting things back on the device. So we were, like, way ahead of our time. Tried to get some radio stations on board. Couldn't get any radio stations on board. And I finally eventually went back to my previous employer, Clear Channel, and I found out through my attorney that the head of Clear Channel, Randy Mays, like the owners, like they were the Mays brothers that owned Clear Channel. So I found out that Randy Mays was going to be at a fundraiser in Santa Monica. And so I snuck into the fundraiser, put on a black suit. It was like a black tie event, put on a black suit, close enough, right? Put on my best black shoes, snuck in. Literally, it was in a hangar at an airport. And people who are familiar with Santa Monica know about the Santa Monica airport where they had tons of events like this. And I snuck in through an open tent in the back. And I went right up to Randy Mays, who was talking to a bunch of people and entertaining, like holding court. I went right up to Randy Mays because I knew I was going to get thrown out any minute. And I said to him, "Hey, Randy, used to work for you, had this great idea. What if you put all of your radio stations on one website and then like stream them through a mobile phone?" Right? He loved the idea. 3 weeks later, I was on a plane to meet with his CTO at their headquarters. And we, you know, signed all kinds of paperwork and everything like that and went into business together. But still, even then, it was like way, way, way too early. And the companies like Singular, do you remember Singular, Lamar?
I've been with Singular and AT&T forever. That's why they give me any and everything that I actually asked for, man. Yes.
They don't even call it, right. So it used to be called Singular.
Yep.
Some young people in your audience don't even know what we're talking about right now. And so Singular Wireless, and we went to Verizon, we went to all these companies, and all of them said, no. I know that you're partnered with the biggest radio company in the world, but we don't want to be like a dumb pipe. Basically, like, anyway, long story short, they all said no. So I'm thinking, you know, pack it up. It's the end. I'm thinking, at the time, I'm thinking I'm a failure. You know, it didn't work. Lost everything, put it all in there, and, you know, nothing came out of it. Started a new company a few years later, and out of the corner of my eye, I start to hear things about this company called iHeartRadio. Because remember, I partnered with this company called Clear Channel. And we were the first company in that partnership to stream Clear Channel radio stations on a mobile phone. And so that was the basis for iHeartRadio, the first app. And so I'm hearing all this stuff about iHeartRadio. I'm like, yeah, what's this? Oh, it sounds really familiar. Oh, that's what happened. Okay. So, but we just kept going with what we had with the next company, because we just really, really believed that that was going to be bigger. And I had a choice between like saying, okay, will I spend the next 10 years or 5 or 10 years suing them or just like making this a super legal thing, or do I pursue the next thing? And honestly, Lamar, for the first 5 years, I was so embarrassed about the experience that I didn't even tell anybody that I had, all the documents at home.
Wow.
Like, I didn't even tell anybody about it because I was embarrassed that, but then when I started to get out of my own ego and have a different relationship with failure and have an understanding that all those experiences helped me be a better entrepreneur, so I could even start to raise money in the second venture. And then obviously this third venture, like we're a venture-backed company, we're doing really well, et cetera, et cetera. So
when I got out of all that stuff, I realized, oh my God, like, how could you not tell people what you did? Because it adds so much credibility to what you're doing today. So.
Wow. So the more of this story, have a black suit in the car, black shoes, look for an open place in the tent, slide there, walk up to an individual, be very, very professional before you get thrown out of that. Man, you are amazing. So two other things I my listeners want me to hit you with. I got to ask these questions. So sure. Allende, tell me, how did you end up on Millionaire Matchmaker?
Well, I'll tell you that it was a phenomenal experience. I was like not familiar with the show at all. I didn't know anything about the show. I was about to sell what we thought we were about to sell the first company. We had this, the second company. We had created some technology, about to sell it, there were actually two companies that put offers on it. And I was like, hey, I've been like in the dark, in the way, just working my butt off for the last 6-7 years. Let me like celebrate. And I heard about this show. They wanted me on it. And I was like, okay, let's do this. And then my investors were like, hey, maybe we shouldn't sell it because you're going to get so much attention on the show. So, you know, let's hold on to it. So it was really kind of like an amazing moment because it was before like reality TV had really taken off. It's back in 2010, right? It's like literally a decade ago. And I didn't know anything about the show, so I didn't know that I was supposed to be a jerk. And I just myself, I was just a nice person, like, trying to figure it out. And I was super, super popular on the show. So it was really great for me personally. I was 37 years old, and I was like, you know, just like, it was fun. It was just fun. And for the business, it was phenomenal. Like we were able to move the business forward on a lot of ways that we would have never been able to do had we not been on the show. So it was a very positive experience overall. I went back on the show a couple of times, probably shouldn't have done that. Honestly, ego probably got the better of me on another show, but it was an amazing experience. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I got to play beach volleyball. I'm a beach volleyball player. I got to play beach volleyball on national television, on international television. I got to do amazing things on the show. There's a helicopter ride. I've really been blessed and lived. So
speaking of amazing things, you had the opportunity to be a speechwriter for President Obama. And I have to share an personal Obama story. Pete Souza, who is the official photographer of the Obamas, photographed my children, really my son, my daughter, daughters. Yeah. But my son's photo is a very, very historic photo. I'm so proud of Mosiah. Obama actually picked my son up and they both are holding the peace sign at each other. And this one of two photos showed up in the Washington Post. It was at the time, it was the 1 year anniversary of Obama being the president. And he basically read an article. They interviewed children, they interviewed African-American children. Well, actually they interviewed a variety of children wanting to know how they felt having an African-American president. Well, Obama read the article, invited all the kids in. My son, who was the youngest of everybody, he was there along just for the ride. My daughter, Hadaya Ayodele, who the article was about, he took over the entire show because when Obama opened up his door, my son was standing right there. And you see this photo that's in the Washington Post. And so since you're talking about, you know, amazing opportunities, that was an amazing opportunity for me. So we share that connection. But how did you get the opportunity to be a speechwriter for President Obama? And what was that like?
let me just say, Mosiah, wow, good for him, and amazing experience to have Sousa photograph your family. That's just amazing. I don't have anything quite as glamorous as that. My experience was, it started off as a volunteer. Like so many other people, saw him in 2004. I pointed at my TV and said, that man will be president. Like, I didn't know when, but I just yelled at my TV, that man will be president. And then in 2006, when he announced, I was $1 of his, you know, of his first million, right? Because he raised $1 million that night. And then in 2007, I wrote on a vision board, I'm going to shake his hand. Like, literally, that was what I wanted to do. I just wanted to shake the man's hand. 2 weeks later, I shook his hand, met him at a private fundraiser in Beverly Hills, where he won over all of Hollywood. Barbara Streisand was who he had to win over, and he won over she and about 100 other people in this small, I mean, not small, in this living room of who's now a mentor of mine, Mike Medavoy, with about, you know, 50 or 100 people in the room. And I got a chance to ask a question of him, and I asked him what his strategy was for beating Hillary, and he spent about 10 minutes expanding on his strategy and sharing how he was going to do that. So that was an amazing event. At that event, I stayed in touch. I met his crew. I stayed in touch with everyone and continued to work with the campaign, and eventually got introduced to his chief of staff. He and I hit it off, David Axelrod, exchanged emails, and I just started sending ideas. And what was really profound, what was really amazing, and was really the reason why I believe their secret weapon, why they did so well, I don't know how they vetted the ideas, but they listened to everyone. And that comes from the top, right? Like, the guy has big ears for a reason, and he listens to people. And I think that permeated throughout the organization. So this, like, you know, I went to school for political science and marketing. I had no idea that I would ever, like, combine those two things for messaging. And I sent ideas, and one of the ideas was, again, remember I said all the good ones come from God? I was, like, super, super concerned about where the campaign was going, and I went to sleep, and I said, God, please talk to me in my sleep. And I woke up with the words, the fundamental choice in this election is not the choice between black versus white, rich versus poor. The choice is the choice between the past and the future. And I sent that to David Axelrod that morning. That night, Barack took the stage in South Carolina for his victory speech, and he said those words. And I was watching, and I had no idea he was going to say those words. And it was just like two worlds just collided. Like, I was watching television and it was just so weird because he started to say, it's like, you know, like when you have deja vu, he started to say words, and I was like, I know what's coming next.
Wow.
And that was the moment that I wrote for President Obama.
Well, man, brother Allende, I can talk to you forever. Your stories are amazing. Your life's work and mission is beautiful, and I wish you the best. But before we jump off, I want you to share with the listeners how they can get in contact with you. And then my favorite part of the show is a super bomb question where I'm going to ask you these very, very short questions, and I want a response from you as quickly as possible. But the first part, how can our listeners get in contact with you?
Okay, easy. I'll give you my email address. It's AYINDE, Allende, at
findneedle.com. That simple. F-I-N-D, N as in Nancy, E as in Edward, D as in David, L as in Larry.com.
Okay. All right, so here we go. The Super Bomb question. I'm going to ask you some quick questions, and I need you to respond.
I love your branding.
Your branding
is amazing.
Oh, man, we're working on that, man. After we get off this, of course, I got some other business questions I would love to ask you. You and I have a connection. I was a political science major as well, man. But studying dead white men, I got tired of that. That's a whole other conversation, man. So let's get down to the Super Bomb questions. Very first question, what is your favorite sound?
I'd say the favorite sound is the sound of one drop of water hitting a larger body of water.
What's your favorite word?
Excellent.
What's your superpower?
Intuition.
What's your spirit animal or animal spirit?
A badger.
What's your favorite quote or Bible verse?
This too shall pass.
What dead person would you most like to meet or get advice from?
My dad.
What is the book or books you've given most as a gift and why?
The Science of Getting Rich Because It Works, Wallace E. Waddles.
And what is Ayinde's morning routine and ritual as he starts his day?
Wake up at 7, no alarm clock, shower, and then I'm ready for the world.
All right, got one more question. Find voices be heard. The hashtag find voices be heard. What can people expect when they click or search the hashtag?
Freedom.
That's a great way to end the show, man, brother Ayinde. I really, really thank you and I appreciate you. I also want to thank my new producer, Noemi, and Supremacy for our theme music and all of you for listening. As always, believe that something wonderful is about to happen and that some people miss the message because they're too busy looking for the mess. Thanks for tuning in and do something for someone other than yourself today. You've been listening to Sound Bombing.